$15 million that would be turned back across the country, and then they would allocate it out to other states or whatever. This year, $273 million was turned back in to the federal government. The federal government has the authority to sort of grant this money out, and we are asking that they take anywhere between $12 and $27 million and do two things with that money. We're asking them, one, to set up a grant program and try to keep it simple like we did with the FRRP. Set up a program where state agencies can apply for money to do innovative projects. So it would be no match required to get this money. It would not be allowed to be used just to replace and update equipment. That is not what we want this money for. We want it to do something differently. I mentioned the cafeterias, the antiquated cafeterias are sitting there. We need to convert those to micro markets or manned micro markets or something. You know, that the money could be used for something like that. The money could be used to implement the technical assistance guidance that says that the state agency cannot third party for federal unassigned locations, and it can be used to buy equipment so that blind vendors could start servicing those accounts. It can be used to do things like buy carts, buy food trucks. It can be used to go out in the private sector and open up a facility. It can be used to open up something like a laundromat. It can be used to open up a dry cleaner, something that is non-food. We've also included in our suggested list of things they could spend it for that the state could modernize its infrastructure in terms of the technology it uses to administer the program. Currently, most states are basically using spreadsheets, Excel spreadsheets, for compiling their data for the RSA 15. Anyway, that's what we are asking for the Department of Education to do. Congress, members of Congress we've talked to think it's a good idea. They're talking to the Department of Education about it. And like I said, we have a call with them on Thursday. We tried this last year, so I'm not going to, this is not new. Frank and some of you have already heard of it. If you read the blitz, you've already heard last year when we tried this. But this year, we think we got a realistic chance. And that's the way it is in the government. You go your first time, you're probably more times than not, you're going to strike out. The FRRP money that we got, you know, we got it the first try. That was just an unusual circumstance. So usually you end up having to go back couple or three times before you really get what you want, and so we think we have a really good chance of getting it. We're even asking Congress if they're really supportive of it, that they put it in the appropriations language directing the Department of Education to do this. The other thing we want them to do with that money is to conduct a comprehensive study of Randolph-Shepard. We need to figure out where we stand. What are the barriers to moving this program forward? What laws need to be changed to move this program forward? What regulations need to be changed to move this program forward? What are the things that we can do as it's currently constructed to move this program forward? So we want to study, we'll come back to Congress or the Department of Education and say, these are our recommendations. Here's the situation, here's the problem, and here's how we fix it. And although I can tell you, I can sit down and write it out myself on what the problems are and how to fix them. Coming from Terry Smith or NABEM is going to have the same weight as if you have this independent study that is conducted. So there are a lot of things we can do to improve the program. Accessing the ability, one program is an option. Giving companies tax credits to allow us to come in and operate their vending or their food service is something that we would like to see happen. Going with opening up a more of an 8A model for our guys is something that would help. There's all kinds of things that we can do. And we would like to see a study that comes out and just sort of lays those out for everybody to see in black and white and come back with those recommendations. So stay tuned. it was the same situation. They used some money that was left over in the previous budget, and Congress required us to do it. And it was like January before they sent out any guidance. I think February, you had to have your applications in, and they started sending money out in March, maybe, or April. So that's sort of the same kind of time frame we would be looking at this. Our biggest fear is not that the Department of Education will give us the money, is that they'll make it so complicated and so bureaucratic that it'll discourage states from even applying to get those funds. So anyway, that's fucking.
Please note, I was disconnected. I am reconnecting to the meeting now.
Program in conjunction with Hadley and the Hadley Institute in Chicago. Chicago. We just recently moved that training over to the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind, and Hadley will no longer be doing that training. But the good news is that the instructor went with the training program. The director of the institute went with the training program, so our folks will see no change. It's the same curriculum, same instructor, and everything else. The only difference is that they're getting their paycheck from, and so there shouldn't be any difference on that. A lot of conversation about the electric vehicle charging stations and the impact that they could possibly have on our Randolph-Shepherd location, and Department of Transportation would have loved to put those charging stations at the interstate rest areas, but there's currently a prohibition against doing that. They came up with the idea that if we can call this a vending machine, then the blind have the right to put in vending machines, and the blind can put those electric charging stations in there. They asked the Department of Education in January to do something to clarify for them whether an electric vehicle charging station is a vending machine or not. It clearly is. There's no question about it. But the Department of Education, only as the Department of Education can do, has sat on it. And we expect that they will be publishing something in the Federal Register soon that redefines vending machine, and it will clarify that an electric vehicle charging station is a vending machine. That will open it up so states will at least have the opportunity, if they choose, to put these charging stations at the interstate rest areas. We'll have to see how all of that plays out, and what the business model looks like, and how much money there is to be made. All of that kind of stuff remains to be seen. I don't think it's going to be the windfall that we were hoping it would be, but I think there is, at this point, based on everything we've been talking about so far, any increased revenue is a positive, for us. Our issue from an ABM standpoint is that we strongly believe that vending machines at rest areas, and Congress intended for blind vendors to operate those, they never intended for state agencies to take those and to use it as a revenue source. Our concern about the charging stations is that some states will take the money and that it won't actually result in increased income to blind vendors. So currently there are 1,100 rest areas out there, 600 are managed by blind vendors, and third parties are managing the other 500. So we want to see blind vendors actually employed in these rest area programs. Let's see as my screen goes dark here and I can't see what I'm talking about. So the other thing is many of you may have seen what we were talking about with the Jerry Bird decision in Oregon about them, being able to get damages from a state agency. The Federal Court of Appeals out there overturned the decision in the lower court and basically said that Jerry Bird could not get damages from the state agency, and therefore it pretty well always said you can't get damages from the state unless you live on the West Coast, and now that's not even the case. So that's pretty well shut that door. Vendors can sue state employees in their individual capacity. But it's a very narrow window where you can do that. I mean, you can't if you're not happy with Tyrell over you didn't get a promotion or something like that, you're probably not going to be able to sue Tyrell. The only you'd be able to sue a state agency person would be if they somehow violated your civil rights. An example would be if they terminated your license without giving you due process or something like that. So and most states, they're not going to do something that's stupid. So, for all practical purposes, the idea of being able to file a grievance and make the agency pay and all that kind of stuff is not realistic. Now, with that said, I still encourage people to go the grievance route. about. And in many cases, states who realize that they were wrong will voluntarily settle the case. So there's nothing that prevents the state from doing that. But if you think you're going to sue and get damages, that's just not going to happen. Finally, I hope you guys are listening to the podcast that Dickie and I are doing. We are having a blast doing the We Are Randolph Shepherd podcast. And we usually start out with some silliness, and then we get into the real meat of the matter. Tyrell actually was on one of our podcasts. We did a man on the spot, what do you call it, man on the scene or whatever, at the NAMA show, and Tyrell was there, and so we interviewed Tyrell to give his take on what was going on at NAMA, and the innovation and things that he was seeing out there. So we encourage you to anywhere you get your podcast, it's We, the letter R, Randolph Shepherd. And it's just me and Nikki, and every month we have a special guest on and we talk about different topics. So please, 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 please sign on and listen to that podcast. We have gone international now. Our last podcast, we had 50 listeners from around the world, you know, countries I've never heard of. We have listeners. That's really interesting. I don't know why in the world they'd be interested in listening to our podcast, but they did. So anyway, that's sort of, you know, the national update that I wanted to give before we start talking about, you know, the committee and being the committee that Congress intended. So. Before I get into that, I'd like to open it up. I could probably take 5 or 10 minutes of questions if anybody has any. Okay.
Hi, it's Adam Fairbanks, and I wanted to ask, how many podcasts that you have?
We have how many? Eight episodes. We started this year. The first one was actually, we recorded it in January, but it was released February the 1st. So we have the first two were really interesting because it was an interview with Jim Gashel about the history of the Act and the 1974 amendments. It's got a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that happened with that. We've done one with looking at the supply chain issues, inflation, and that kind of stuff. And we did a couple on nominee agency. So we've got eight out there. And we're going to be recording number 9. They drop the first day of every month.
Okay, thank you.
This is Tracy. I've had the pleasure, Terry, to listen to many of the podcasts, and I find them extremely informational and entertaining all at the same time. So I encourage everyone, if you can, to listen to them.
Well, thank you.
Hi, this is Shirley. Question. At the beginning when you started out with your statistics of what was operational, what wasn't, how long and when did you actually compile your data, and are you still compiling data?
We're still compiling data. I sent out the survey last Wednesday, and I'm trying to get as many responses as I can before our meeting with the Department of Education on Thursday. So that data is as fresh as it could possibly be. We've had 20 of the 50 states who have responded, and I've not checked my email in the last several hours, so we could have had more than that who have responded today. So, it's current. Yeah, and along those lines, Tyrell mentioned that he doesn't even waste his time thinking about program pre-pandemic. It was sort of funny. We did a scorecard, it is all based on objective data off of the RSA 15. We developed a scoring sheet, And the only thing that was semi-subjective was when we rated your Little Randolph Shepherd Act, and it was even a, you know, an objective rating system. So we came up, we had all the states ranked in order from, we only had like 47 of the states, RSA 15. And so we had all the states ranked, and the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind went crazy when they found out that we were going to release those numbers, because whoever is in the 47, 46, 40, their vendors are going to be livid, and those state agencies are going to be under attack, and they said it's going to create all kinds of problems and all that kind of stuff. And so I said we compromised, and I said, okay, we won't release 1 through 47, but we will give the top 10. And so that way everybody can aspire to be in the top 10. And so we were sort of, we were ready to do that just as the pandemic hit. We were still in the process of compiling all the data. And pandemic hit, and it all became academic, because as Tyrell said, there's no sense looking back at what was happening pre-pandemic. And so we never did release that. And I think doing a scorecard at this point would probably not be fair either. But, you know, maybe 3 years from now, we need to revisit that and come up with something. And that's one of the things that we've been critical of RSA about, is that they don't do anything to really hold the states accountable or measure their performance or anything like that. So this was sort of a way to sort of broadcast to the world who's doing good and who's not. But the old COVID-19 put a halt to that.
Another question to kind of piggyback off of that. Once again, this is Shelley. So some of the cafeterias and, like you said, the old dining halls that are shut down now, do you also have data of those who have remained open, who have converted over to micro market?
I do not have data. I only have anecdotal stories of people of agencies who, and in some of the surveys, I got notes that the person, the director, wrote me. I got several notes saying these facilities we didn't close these facilities, but we converted these cafes to micro markets. But as far as that was not, you know, in hindsight, I wish we had asked that question, but we didn't do that. And I try to keep it as short, as brief as we could, because we needed the information fast.
Gotcha. Thank you.
But we have a subscription to SurveyMonkey, and we may start sending out more surveys like that to try to see what kind of results we get. Any other questions?
Hi, this is Karan. I have a question. Is there a website where all this data and information is available?
Which information are you talking about? I mean, there's not a website where the statistics I just gave you, that is not available anywhere, because it's brand new. The scorecard information, none of that is available, because we never released it. So I guess the short answer to your question is no. We have our website, which is blindmerchants.org, where there's a lot of information there, but not the stuff, most of the stuff that I've been talking about.
Yeah, that's the information I'm talking about, you know, what's happening, the updates, not the data related to, you know, the scorecard and everything, the general information.
Yeah, we do a newsletter every quarter or so, but I'm behind. It's called The Blip, and so that needs to come out in the next couple of weeks, but the all of those are up on the website, so you can go back and read all those from the last several years, but the most current one will be up in the next couple of weeks. And I usually send that out to everybody in advance anyway.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Frank. Now that I know Karan's listening, it's kind of a two-parted question. One, I would think, if you can confirm, that Bending is back in the waiting areas of the federal prisons. And the second part of the question is, if someone wanted to add a federal prison to their district of Bending, what would that person need to do, and how strong are the priority rights in a federal prison?
Well, I'm not exactly sure the status of every federal prison. I know some federal prisons are back. I don't know if that's a national decision or if they're doing it, you know, prison by prison. The priority applies 100% to federal prison, so that's not even a question. So, you know, if you have if there's a location that you can get, then adding it to your route or whatever, that's a pretty simple thing. That's one agency that I have written hard copies of letters to the secretary. I have tried to email. Education doesn't have a contact. We just want to talk to them, and we can't find anybody that is even willing to have a conversation. They won't even identify who the right person is. So we're sort of out there winging it when it comes to the Bureau of Prisons. But the priority clearly applies.
Okay, so how do we get in there? What would we have to do?
So you're not in there now, is that what you're saying?
No, we're not currently there now.
You'd have to reach out to them. I mean, and you don't have it on third party unassigned, right?
Right.
You as the individual, or you mean you as the state?
The SLA. The SLA would have to reach out to that particular prison, request to do a survey, and then apply for a permit. And then if the permit is approved, you put the machines in, and then you start servicing them. How you assign it to what vendor, I don't know. That'd be up to you. How you do stuff that according to your state rules.
Yep.
Okay, so Frank, when they talk about being the committee that, you know, that Congress envisioned for the committee to be. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And, you know, I came from a state, like I said, I was in Brian Sigmund's job for 28 years. And just as an aside, Brian used to laugh. He would call me Randy Shepherd. That was his name for me. It was Randy Shepherd. I chaired the Red Dog Shepherd Committee in GSAB for the last 11 years, or last 10 years that I was with the state. And he was president of NCSAB at one point, and I was president of NCSAB. And so, you know, Brian and I go way back. And anyway, the I don't even know what point I'm about to make about that, but the committee. I come from a state that has really believed in active participation, and we didn't always agree. We had to agree to disagree, but active participation was just part of everything we did. It was an attitude. It was a mindset, and so it never became an issue with